We never wanted to be in a fancy metropolitan broadcast facility where the most thought-provoking thing within view is an occasional four-car pileup on the freeway below. We like being miles from nowhere, in the middle of a vineyard that cannot be seen from the little two-lane road on the other side of that rise. Our barn has awesome acoustics and was built with hand tools over 100 years ago. Nonetheless, we've got some really state-of-the-art broadcast technology inside. And our wine cellar, once a root cellar, that is absolutely packed with wine we've collected or been given by friends. Welcome. You have just set foot on Grape Encounters radio property, where we don't believe in no trespassing signs. But let's make this our little secret. Oh, and that wine is protected by the sweetest-looking golden retriever who dated a bipolar Doberman for a while, so don't get any ideas.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
You know, wine barrels never really die. They just come back in your front yard as a planter for your petunias. Oh, if that wine barrel could talk, the stories it would tell. Hi, it's David Wilson, time for another Grape Encounter. And today, because I get so many questions about the different kinds of oak that are used to flavor your wine, I thought it would be good to have a bit of a discussion about that on this week's show. Grape Encounters Radio is proudly brought to you by EpicStyle.com. If you're living the wine lifestyle or you want to live the wine lifestyle, then you've got to hightail it to EpicStyle.com. They have everything, and I mean everything, that you could ever want or need if you are a wine lover, a spirit lover, or even a beer lover. I love their products. There's thousands of them to just salivate over at EpicStyle.com. Now, on the line, I have a good friend of Grape Encounters Radio. He's a gifted winemaker. His name is Larry Schaefer. He runs Tercero Wines, and he knows an awful lot about an awful lot. And I wanted to get Larry to help us clarify the role oaks play in the final flavor of the wine that you drink. Hey, Larry, I'm so glad to have you on Grape Encounters Radio. It's been too long.
I'm glad I can join you as well, David. Always a pleasure.
You know what? I think you must be the busiest guy on the planet in terms of guys in the wine business. You make a lot of different wines. Do you just have this passion for experimenting?
Well, I do. I concentrate on Rhone varieties. I concentrate on Syrah and Grenache and Petite Syrah and Mourvèdre on the red side. And in almost every case, I get fruit from different vineyard sources. And so the end result is different, and therefore I label it as such.
You pick and choose what's best for you. For the past couple of weeks, we probably actually spent too much time talking about inexpensive wines. And one of the big differences between cheap wine and a more expensive wine often is the fact that those cheap wines aren't getting the oak barrel aging that the other wines are getting just because of the cost prohibitive nature of the barrels. Now, you as an independent winemaker and somebody who's running a relatively small operation, is that a huge consideration for you?
It is and it isn't. You know, I think that the use of oak really is somewhat dependent upon what you want your end product to be and what your methodologies are. With the varieties that I work with, especially Grenache and Mourvèdre, these are varieties that are beautiful on their own.
Right.
And I prefer to use no new oak on any of these varieties because I just think it masks the natural element of the wine itself. With regards to a kind of cheap and expensive wine, I've found that there are some inexpensive wines that are aged in oak. They may be aged in all older oak barrels, and so the cost is much, much less. Sometimes they certainly are aged using oak alternatives. And I think that most consumers would be surprised to find out that even some mid-priced wines that they would find have a tremendous oak presence actually see no oak barrels, but are only aged in stainless steel using oak additives.
Let's run down what that cost differential is, because first of all, a barrel's going to cost what?
A new American oak barrel will be somewhere in, say, the $300 to $400 range.
Right.
A new French oak barrel will generally start about $700 to $800, but can easily ramp up to $1,200, $1,300, $1,400, depending upon what the exchange rate is.
There are some processes now that will recycle those barrels in ways that we weren't able to do before. I know there are a number of companies that have this recoup process that they use. Essentially, what they do is they just go in and, I guess, plane down the interior of the barrel, take out, a quarter of an inch of the wood so that we get down to fresh material?
That's exactly what they do, and then they retoast the barrel. And it's a great way of kind of reinvigorating a used barrel and making it seem more like a new barrel at a fraction of the cost of what a new barrel would be.
Are you familiar with this process called CryoClean?
I have heard of it. I've never experienced it myself. I have winemaker friends up north that have been very, very pleased with the results that they've had so far.
Yeah, it's a dry ice blasting system, and essentially they just go in and blast a layer of the wood off. They claim that the barrel is 99% pure and as good as a barrel that would be brand spanking new. Seems like a pretty nice option. In your opinion, how much of a difference really from a flavor standpoint is there between the different types of oak and, you know, specifically French versus American, and then there's Hungarian, there's Slovenian. Have you tried any of those?
At the previous company I worked for, we did use Hungarian oak, and I will say that from a bang for your buck standpoint, from an aromatic standpoint, you get a lot of bang for your buck. Those barrels tend to be in the same price range as American oak barrels, so they're $300 to $400 instead of the $800 to $1,000 or $1,200. So they're much less expensive. But I will say that there are pretty major differences between American oak and French oak, and used incorrectly, you can add very interesting aromatic profiles to wines that you wouldn't necessarily want to by using the wrong barrel.
I am speaking to Larry Schaefer. He is really a very gifted winemaker. And by the way, I'm totally in love with his wine called Christy. You still have that available?
I do. It's a blend that changes every year, but it's a Grenache, Syrah, Mourvedre blend.
You can find Larry's wines at tercerowines.com. I will spell that for you, tercerowines.com. And we'll continue our discussion with Larry Schaefer in just a moment, but two other websites I really want to point out to you. The first is napkinjnc.com. Oh my gosh, what an incredible product this is. It's about the size of a breath mint, but actually it's a compressed napkin that is absolutely amazing. All you do is add a few drops of water and this thing blooms into a very sturdy, very soft, and very useful towelette. Use it on the golf course, keep it in your purse, in your glove box, low tech, but absolutely amazing and very inexpensive. Get yours at napkinjnc.com. It's napkinjnc.com. Another website that you really want to visit is CatalinaExpress.com. This week, I got to go out to Catalina Island on the Catalina Express. I love the Catalina Express. Sit back, relax, enjoy. What a great way to get away. It's so comfortable and so economical and so easy to book online at CatalinaExpress.com. And remember, if it's your birthday, you get to ride for free. Convenient departures daily from San Pedro, Long Beach, and Dana Point. Find out more information about that offer at CatalinaExpress.com. So let's talk about the lifespan of a barrel for a second. A typical barrel will be used how many times?
You know, that's a very good question, and I think...
And I know it's different. It's different for different winemakers.
Yeah, the answer is it really depends. I mean, when you use a new American or new French oak barrel, the very first time you use it, it's going to have a tremendous impact on the wine, both aromatically and flavor-wise as well. The more often it's used, the less of an impact it's going to have on the wine, but it's still going to have an impact even after 3, 4, 5, 6 uses. There's going to be a richness in the mid-palate that oak is going to provide because of the micro-oxygenation which takes place in oak that does not take place in stainless steel. So older oak barrels are still going to add mouthfeel to wine, even if they're not going to add a tremendous amount of aromatic pop.
How much strategy goes into deciding how old of a barrel you're going to use?
I think that really depends upon the size winery you are. Where the winery that I used to work for, every lot that came in had a separate barrel plan, and that barrel plan was a combination of new 1, 2, 3, and 4-year-old and older oak barrels. And there was a set plan for every single one of these lots in advance of that lot coming in. Me personally, I'm a small producer. The newest oak barrel I use is a 2-year-old oak barrel. I don't have that much of an issue. Almost all my barrels are uniform and the same, so I don't really play out which one is going to be used for which lot, other than if I do have newer oak barrels, I'm probably going to put them on, say, Syrah or Petite Syrah, as opposed to putting them on Grenache or Mourvedre, as I mentioned before.
Do you ever use chips, oak chips?
I never do, but there certainly is a time and a place for them. Oak chips can be used in many places, and it's not uncommon to use oak chips when wine comes in less than perfect, so to speak. So, for instance, oak chips are oftentimes used at the crusher, or oak dust or oak powder is used at the crusher for wines that are, say, underripe and maybe have a green element, because it's known that oak chips at that process, during the fermentation process, can assist in reducing a greenness in wine. Chips also can assist in adding oak tannins, which can assist in fixing color. So if you have a wine that is color challenged, so to speak, and you're not going to blend immediately, you can use oak chips so that the color molecules have a place to bind to.
Oh my gosh. Well, Larry, a wealth of information. I really appreciate it. I really wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to get out and do a little tasting. You have a brand new tasting room in Los Olivos. That's located where?
It's located on the corner of Alamo Pintado Avenue and San Marcos Avenue, right across the street from the Corner House Coffee. You can go to my website or follow me on Facebook or email me, and I'll be more than happy to let you know exactly where it is, and I'd be more than happy to provide the listeners of Grape Encounters a great offer to come in as well.
So awesome to have Larry on Grape Encounters Radio. Coming up next, equating the forgotten grapes to your favorite pop icons. If there's any winemaking operation that I'm really proud to endorse and talk about on a regular basis, it's Sarlos & Sons in Los Olivos, California. You know, we did one of the very first broadcasts of Grape Encounters Radio from the Sarlos & Sons tasting room. And I'll tell you, it really set the tone for our show, because Sarlos & Sons really is everything that Grape Encounters Radio is all about. They do more than just make great wines. They pour their personality into every single bottle, and it's evident in every sip that you take. Sarlos & Sons wines are very special. These are very special people, and you simply won't go wrong by buying their wines. You can find their wines at sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com. Or better yet, why not just pack your bags and head up to Los Olivos and check them out firsthand. It's Sarlos & Sons wines. It doesn't get any better than that. Would you love to go someplace special and enjoy a nice Bordeaux on your birthday? Well, you'll have a lot of money to spend on wine if you celebrate on Catalina Island. That's because the fast and comfortable Catalina Express will take you to Catalina on your birthday absolutely free. This program was unveiled on May 1st to celebrate the 30th birthday of the Catalina Express, and guess who got to be the first to take advantage of this truly awesome offer? Yep, little old Mayday me. Catalina Express has multiple daily departures out of Long Beach, San Pedro, and Dana Point. And for a small fee, you can even upgrade to the Commodore's Lounge, where a nice glass of wine, champagne, or their world-famous Bloody Mary is part of the package. Birthday or not, this is a great time to visit Catalina. For more information about schedules, fares, hotel packages, activities like the new Zipline Eco Tour, or to book tickets online, visit CatalinaExpress.com. Start your adventure at CatalinaExpress.com.
It's so easy to go to Catalina, Catalina Express, Catalina.
Down in New Orleans, everything is fine. All of the cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mess to their delight. When they get drunk, they started fighting all night, drinking wine, sporty, yody, drinking wine.
It's David Wilson back with more Grape Encounters Radio. The other night, I sat down and I enjoyed, like I have not enjoyed a bottle of wine in a long time, a bottle of Malbec that was a Chilean Malbec that really made me think that it is high time that we get back on the air and start talking about some varietals that you are probably not drinking on a daily basis. Now, I know a lot of people are drinking Malbec. Be that as it may, there are more that are not. And there are many, many varietals that you are now seeing show up on your grocery store shelves, wine store shelves that are really gaining popularity. But for the mainstream population, I think a lot of us are really missing the boat. There's a guy that we had on some months ago, and he has a company that is exactly what the doctor ordered if you're going to talk about this subject. His name is Chris Kern. His company is Chris Kern's Forgotten Grapes. And I'm so glad to have Chris here. Chris, we had a great time at the LA County Fair.
We did. That was a lot of fun.
And now we get to talk a little bit more about the more obscure varietals. And you know what? I have to say this. We can talk a bit about some really off-the-wall things that people really have to go hunting for.
I've got hundreds if we need to.
I know you do. I know you do. But I want to go to that next tier of grapes. First of all, let's talk about your company, what you do. Now, one thing is this, is that you have a an incredibly popular program, which is the Sunday Night Chef Fights.
Correct. Yes.
And the Sunday Night Chef Fights are a competition between renowned chefs in a particular area. You move all over the place, right?
Yeah, they're live TV-style cooking competitions. So if you've ever watched a cooking competition show on the Food Network or Bravo, you're familiar with the concept. But what we do is we do them in local venues. We bring two local chefs together of some renown. We give them ingredients, we give them time to cook, and they're cooking in front of and for an audience of up to 60 or 70 people, and that audience gets to act as the judge, jury, and taste-ecutioner, as
now,
we say.
Now, when do they know what the ingredients are going to be?
We'll draw the ingredients with the chefs 1 week before the event.
Okay,
so
all right.
We'll draw a base protein, a base vegetable, and a base grain starch dairy that they'll have to use somehow in their dishes. They don't have to use each one in every dish they have. But then 2 days before the competition, so we run them on Sundays, this would be on a Friday, we give them a mystery ingredient. And that's always something fun for the audience, something they're familiar with, but kind of zags when the rest of the ingredients zig. Things like port wine, rum, pumpkin we've had recently, honey, yellow mustard, kosher dill pickles. We've done marshmallows, kind of crazy out there ingredients that you're not normally cooking with every day, but that people are familiar with, and the chefs can have access
to. Okay, and how does wine figure into the competition?
So as part of the Sunday Night Chef Fights, we do a Vino Vidi Vici blind wine tasting competition, as we call it. We'll pour three wines for the audience members. We won't tell them what it is. We'll cover up the label, and we'll find out at the end of the night which is their favorite, reveal the winner and the, they're not really losers, but the non-winners, and let the audience know what the wines are and which one was their favorite.
Now, okay, so on to the Forgotten Grapes. Do we sneak some interesting varietals into that presentation?
Well, it's my passion and my job, so I always try to sneak some Forgotten Grapes in there. In fact, I would say more often than not, we're doing Forgotten Grapes, or we're doing, as we say, lesser known and uncommon regions and producers. That's our sticking point, our main business point for ForgottenGrapes.com.
Last week's show, I was mentioning the fact that back in the, you know, 60s and 70s, really, there were really only, well, actually, there were probably just two choices in wine, red and white, and pink creeped in there from time to time. And as time has gone on, the group of wines that are popular gets bigger and bigger. I think you call them the Big Eight?
Yeah, there's the Big Eight, which is actually nine grapes, which is, but again, there's 12 teams in the Big Ten, and, you know, eight now in the Big 12. So if college football conferences can have different names, we can have that with our grapes too.
Okay, but I mean, be that as it may, you can screw us up if you want to. Okay, so the Big Nine are
Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot.
This ought to be a test, by the way, for people. Like, they should have to name them. But
absolutely.
Okay, think real hard right now. What are the other seven? Okay, there's Cabernet.
Cabernet, Merlot, Pinot Noir, Syrah, Zinfandel, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Grigio, Riesling, and that's nine.
That's nine. And 10 years ago, that list would have been half that size.
I would think so, yeah. Riesling, Syrah would not have been on there. Pinot Grigio would not have been on there. You basically would have had Zinfandel, Cab, Merlot. Even Pinot Noir was still in its infancy back
in
the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, really not as popular. Okay, so the next tier, what do you...
AAA. We'll call it AAA.
All right.
Like baseball.
So this is the minor leagues, okay? The minor leagues of wines will be what?
I think you could include things like Grenache would be in there. Grenache Noir. Grenache Blanc is probably a little lesser there.
Which we're seeing show up in so many blends, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're seeing GSMs pop up all over the place. You kind of have to move them up to that AA, AAA level. You mentioned Malbec before, which is becoming increasingly popular. Carmenere is another one that I would throw out there. You've got Viognier, which has become a very, very popular white. A lot of production in Paso Robles.
And I love it. Absolutely love it.
It's gorgeous. If you can find a properly done Viognier, it is heaven in a bottle.
Yeah, one of my absolute favorite whites.
I'd throw Chenin Blanc in there. Although it might be a little more obscure, but a lot of people drink Chenin Blanc and don't know they're drinking Chenin
Blanc.
Okay,
so what's very interesting about Chenin Blanc is back when my parents were drinking wine, they were drinking Chenin Blanc. And in fact, a lot of that, Chenin Blanc, Chablis, and of course, French Colombard.
Yes, exactly.
Which still is the largest crop of grapes in California, is it not? They use it for mixing. And as I understand it, it's the largest production crop in the state.
I think it's actually been surpassed by Chardonnay. I think we have Fred Franzia to thank for for populating the Central Valley of California with enough Chardonnay to kill a moose. But Chenin Blanc is still very popular. And like you said, the Uni Blanc and French Colombard, because those are the primary grapes used in brandy production. So a lot of the Corbel brandies and the California brandies that you find use the Uni Blanc and the Colombard.
It's Grape Encounters Radio. My guest is Chris Kern, president and CEO of Chris Kern's Forgotten Grapes. More Grape Encounters Radio coming your way. Recently, I came across a product that is so cool, I can't stop talking about it or playing with it. Simply called Napkin and distributed by JNC Enterprises, this little gem comes in the form of a small white breath mint-sized tablet. But don't put it in your mouth, because a little moisture causes it to blossom into a soft and sturdy napkin with countless uses. The amazing napkin will soak up a spilled glass of wine quicker than you can say Cabernet Sauvignon, and you'll want to keep a supply in your purse, glove box, golf bag, garage, tackle box, kitchen, and bathroom. Restaurants use the napkin to amaze diners by placing it and a small pitcher of warm scented water in front of guests who are delighted as they watch this clever product come to life. Get your napkins and other innovative products online at napkinjnc.com. Discover the product that I'm calling this year's most delightful innovation at napkinjnc.com, or click the napkin link on grapeencounters.com. This is absolutely the greatest napkin trick of all time.
A tropical island vacation doesn't have to mean long lines at security, crowded flights, and a huge travel budget. You'll find breathtaking ocean views, tropical breezes, exceptional dining and shopping, plus hundreds of ways to have fun on land and sea, just 26 miles off the Southern California coast, on enchanting Catalina Island. And there's absolutely no better way to enjoy everything that Catalina has to offer than in your own private Catalina Island vacation rental. Catalina Island Vacation Rentals offers you the choice of nearly 200 island homes, cottages, and condos, including an amazing selection of beautifully appointed Hamilton Cove villas, which offer sweeping ocean views and even come with a golf cart. Savor a special glass of wine on your private balcony and let the magic of Catalina sweep you away. All Catalina Island Vacation Rental properties can be viewed online at catalinavacations.com. Make yourself at home with Catalina Island Vacation Rentals. You'll find your perfect island getaway at catalinavacations.com.
She said,
back with more Grape Encounters Radio. David Wilson here with my guest, Chris Kern, president of Chris Kern's Forgotten Grapes, talking about some varietals that you probably are not drinking, but really, really ought to be. So tell me the mission of Forgotten Grapes.
So Forgotten Grapes is basically to educate and inform people in a fun pop culture-centric way about these lesser-known and uncommon varietals, regions, and producers. We want people to, like you said, expand their palates, to try new things, to try some of these great grapes that are out there that, in many cases, make as good, if not better, wines than a lot of the Napa Cabs and Chardonnays and traditional stuff that you'll find in supermarkets or wine lists or in restaurants, but often for a fraction of the price.
I mean, you and I both make a living largely having to do with wine.
Best possible way to make a living.
And I go into a wine shop and I start to buy a Malbec, or something that I don't normally drink, and then I just wander over and I grab that Cab or that Syrah, or better yet, a Cab Syrah blend, and I keep doing that. And lately, I've been forcing myself to drink the things, you know, that that we're talking about, the minor league wines, the ones that are starting to become a little bit popular. And every time I'm amazed and surprised.
Listen to Nancy Reagan in this case. Just say no when it comes to those big nine wines. And I have to say, that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, because I am a fan of those grapes. Syrah is actually my favorite varietal
of
all
time.
Yeah,
me too, yeah.
But I think that they've become so overexposed and so dominant in the market that a lot of people just aren't familiar with what else is out there. So they're very narrowly focused, and we're trying to open that up. And you're doing a great job promoting that here on Grape Encounters and doing what we can to get people to just drink something different.
So here's a theory that I have. I have a theory that these lesser-known varietals, in order for them to make it to the wine store, they have to be a little bit better, or maybe they have to be the cream of the crop compared to, you know, let's say a Cabernet, where there's going to be 100 of them on the shelves, or maybe even more than that. If you're a lesser known varietal, do you think there's any merit to the idea that better quality wines are the ones that are going to make the cut? Or am I just full of just an idea?
I think that's a great idea. I think that's part of it. You know, better quality wines is absolutely definitely something different. So a different flavor profile than you get from the traditional big nine, which is what a lot of these grapes have. I think the price point is actually a huge consideration, because it's hard to get people try something new if it's going to be as expensive or more expensive than what they're traditionally drinking. You're not going to change habits with the same or more expensive wine.
I want to just name a member of the Big Nine team and then have you suggest a few things that somebody might try.
Okay, absolutely.
Cabernet, we start right there.
Oh, good one. Well, how obscure do you want me to get? Do you want me to go AAA or should I get
a rookie ball? Why don't we do this? Why don't we go AAA and then a little more obscure and then really obscure?
If you're talking about a Cabernet, I think a great alternative to that would be a Malbec is a perfect example. Argentinian Malbecs are rich, plummy, decent amount of tannins, but very, very smooth and pretty readily accessible. Of course, as you know, Malbec is one of the original grapes of Bordeaux blends, not used as much as Cabernet and Merlot, obviously, but still used in some trace amounts in the Bordeaux blends.
Okay, more obscure?
More obscure would be, I'd go with a Dolcetto, which is an Italian grape from Piedmont, typically considered a peasant grape, drunk very, very young, but again, big plummy flavors, dark red wine, dark purple wine, a lot of tannins to it. So going to match up with
but certainly not
items.
Obscure if you're in Italy.
Correct. But then again, there's over 3,000 different grape varietals that exist in Italy. So sometimes it's hard to pick and choose. Even I have trouble with a lot of, there's so many Italian varietals.
Okay, now obscure.
Obscure is one of my favorites. Alicante Boucher, which was the number one grape produced in the United States from the years 1920 to 1933, which, if you know your history, just happens to be during Prohibition.
Oh, no. And that had to have a terrible impact on things.
It was one of the worst times in American history, but they needed a grape with a thick skin and dark purple juice that could be transported across the country to people on the East Coast who wanted to make their own wine, which was the one loophole in the Volstead Act. People could actually make their own wine for their own personal use. So the other grapes couldn't survive the tanker trips across country on the train in the car. They'd ferment in the tanker cars. So Alicante Boucher, because it was a thick-skinned grape with deep purple juice, one of the few grapes that has actual purple juice, was the grape that would be transported across.
So what you're saying is that if you were going to make it through Prohibition, you had to have a thick skin.
You had to have thick skin, absolutely.
All right, okay.
And be willing to work on your own.
Okay, so let's go to the whites, and obviously we're going to start with Chardonnay.
Viognier, which we talked about,
absolutely
I think is
a must, right?
Terrific.
I tell people all the time, you need to drink Viogniers, and I think because they can't pronounce it, they look at the label and they scratch their head. I think that's maybe why they don't buy them.
Definitely. I think that's it. You know, Viognier, and Viognier is a fickle, fickle grape, very much a diva grape. And if not picked at just the right time, it can end up being either a little flat or way too heavy in the alcohol. So it can be a difficult grape to produce, and there are some bad examples of it out there.
Okay, so a little more obscure?
A little more obscure than that. I'm going to go with Grüner Veltliner, which is the traditional white grape of Austria, but if you talk to a lot of sommeliers, they will tell you it is their go-to white. It is the white that they like to drink when they're drinking white wine. Crisp, minerally, white pepper notes to it. Comes from the Danube region. Gorgeous, gorgeous wine.
Now, are we talking about wines that you would drink if you preferred an oak Chardonnay or an un-oak Chardonnay?
I'm a purist with the un-oaked Chardonnay.
I like mine
in stainless. So these aren't going to be your butter bombs or your vanilla cones in your hand. These are going to be pure, tart, nice crispness to them. A lot of apple flavors, really delicious.
Thanks to Rex Pickett and the movie Sideways,
The
book Sideways, the movie Sideways, Pinot Noir became a champion of the wine business almost overnight.
Absolutely.
Is there a red wine that you think is sitting out there just behind the curtain that could have taken that position had Rex written about it instead of Pinot?
I think Beaujolais, which a lot of people are familiar only with the Beaujolais Nouveau, which comes out the third Thursday of every year. It's the first wine of the harvest. But as it turns out, there are other versions of Beaujolais. It's made from the Gamay grape in southern Burgundy, so very close to the heart of Pinot Noir production, but lighter red, but can be aged, has some real talent to it, delicious, cherry fruits, strawberry fruits, really a gorgeous wine that more people should be drinking. Again, not the Nouveau, but more of the aged or the Beaujolais Cru there.
Yeah, I don't like the Nouveaus, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And Chris, one of the things that you do is you liken lesser-known varietals to pop icons, right?
Absolutely. It's the way we help people understand these grapes. We take pop culture icons, characters that share similar characteristics to these particular lesser-known and uncommon varietals.
People are shaking their head right now going, no, that makes no sense at all.
But you'll see that it does.
All right, okay, so let's take on a red.
How about Grenache? Grenache is a great example, Grenache Noir. That is the Bob Dylan of forgotten grapes, as we call it.
I can't wait to find out how that goes. Okay, sorry.
It took my glue and my crayons, too. No, so Bob Dylan comes in a variety of different styles. He started folk, then went electric, became kind of a pop icon in the 80s and 90s, and now he's doing old standards and whatnot. Grenache Noir, same way. It's a wine that can be done very, very heavily, very, very lightly. You find it in blends, much like you find Bob and a lot of duets, but it's a grape that can stand on its own, and it's very, very country. A lot of dirt, a lot of gravel notes in the wine, very much a country grape, and Dylan's the same way. You know, a lot of country in his voice and country in his background.
All right, I'll buy that. You have another red?
We'll talk about Mourvèdre, we mentioned earlier. Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre blends, and you're seeing Mourvèdre stand on its own these days. So that is the Edward Cullen of forgotten grapes. And if you're not familiar with Edward Cullen,
okay, go ahead.
He is the sparkly vampire protagonist of the Twilight series, played by Robert Pattinson. You may be familiar with that character.
Yeah, indeed. So how does this all work?
Mourvèdre is a big, scary grape. It's big color, big nose, very kind of horsey, barnyard-style nose to it. Can be very intimidating.
And barnyard gives off that essence of
manure. Yeah, and gravel, yeah. And hay, and all those
sorts
of things.
But that's a nice smell, actually. When you open up a bag of fertilizer, you're putting in a new lawn or something. I like that smell a lot.
It can be very polarizing. I'm one who likes it, too, but there's a lot of people who think it, and they'll think, oh my God, this bottle's ruined. It's not supposed to smell like that. But the fact is that it's Mourvèdre. It's supposed to. So you drink a Mourvèdre, and you think it's going to be this big, angry, heavy tannic wine, like a Cabernet, like a Syrah, and it ends up being very smooth, a little bit lighter, still has a lot of blackberry to blueberry flavors in it, but again, has that softer side, like Edward, the sparkly vampire of Twilight. You think he's a vampire, he's intimidating, but he ends up being very soft and sensitive.
Okay, maybe we can turn to a couple of whites here.
Let's go ahead. How about Pinot Blanc? One of my favorite grapes. Starting to see a lot of it coming out of Oregon these days.
Yes, indeed. And one of my favorites as well. I can't wait to hear what icon you relate to this.
So we call Pinot Blanc the Betty Draper of forgotten grapes. You know Mad Men, you know Betty Draper, played by the illustrious January Jones. So a character who's distant, can be a bit cold, but obviously very, very beautiful, very sought after. Pinot Blanc's the same way. It can have a certain coldness to it. It can have a tartness to it, much like Betty can at times. But it's when done right, it's a beautiful, curvy, feminine, gorgeous wine that you just want to enjoy for hours.
Now, how many grapes and pop icons have you paired?
Right now on the website, forgottengrapes.com.
Oh, we've got them there.
We do. Yeah, we've got 60 there, and we're always adding new ones. And one of the great things about the website is we take suggestions from our audience and our wine buyers. If you've got a forgotten grape to suggest or a pop culture icon to suggest for a specific forgotten grape, we want to hear from you, and we may even use it.
Do you have
website.
A few favorites?
Pinot Blanc is definitely one. I do love Cinsault, which is the posh spice of forgotten grapes.
Why posh spice?
You rarely find it on its own, much like if you ever listen to the Spice Girls, Posh rarely got to sing her own line. She was always in the chorus, but she never got her own lines. She can exist on her own, and when she does, very feminine, very soft, very curvy, and loves. And Cinsault is a wine that is light, pinkish, does great with rosés, very elegant at times, much like Posh can be, but at the same time, can be a bit of a mess.
Now, how about if I named a pop icon, let's say, for instance, Paris Hilton, does she have a grape yet?
She does. It's not really a grape, but it is a particular wine. White Zinfandel is the Paris Hilton of forgotten grapes.
No, say it isn't so. Why?
Tis. I have a thing against people who drink White Zinfandel, since it's kind of an abomination to the wine industry.
So you're saying that Paris is an abomination?
I am saying that Paris, to a certain extent, is an abomination. But again, if you are a connoisseur and you're somebody who appreciates talent and acting and a nice career in the entertainment industry, you're not really respecting Paris and you're not really respecting White Zinfandel along those lines.
Last week, Lady Gaga performed at Bill Clinton's birthday party. She's really the hottest thing going. I've got to think you've got a wine for her.
I do, but I'm not quite ready to do it. I'm still working out the exact way that works. She's such a chameleon that it's going to have to be a very specific type of wine to make sure for Gaga. Plus, I'm not sure whether she's going to burn out here or whether her career is going to last like a Madonna.
Doesn't seem like it at this point in time. Chris Kern, he is the brainchild behind the Sunday Night Chef Fights. Now, those go on every week or every month.
We run two a month. We're in six different venues.
Is that a different website, or can you find a link from ForgottenGrapes.com?
There are links to both. So you can go to Forgotten Grapes, get to the Chef Fights website, and go to ChefFights.com and get the Forgotten Grapes.
You are opening up a new place, or maybe you've already done that, in Riverside, California.
Correct. We'll be launching in November, Chris Kern's Forgotten Grapes. It's going to be our warehouse / retail space for the Forgotten Grapes website, where people will be able to go and buy their wines online across the country.
So this is a warehouse. Could you walk in there as well and shop around?
Yeah, we've got a whole retail section there. We keep our wines there, but we've got a retail section as well.
Pretty exciting that you're doing that. So how many wines do you expect to carry?
We're probably going to start with between 175 and 200 different wines, different labels. Again, focusing mostly on the lesser known and uncommon varietals, regions, and producers. So we will have the traditional big nine, but they're going to be from 2,000 cases or less producers, or some of the out-of-the-way places in California, Oregon, and around the world.
Now, when you go into a knockoff perfume place, it'll say, if you like this, try this, or you'll like this. Are you going to do the same sort of thing with these wines? If you like Cabernet, if you like Chardonnay, whatever, try this, you'll like this.
One of the major components of our website is we call it like this, try that.
I'll tell you what, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I have been very happy the past couple of weeks to have ventured out and started drinking some things that are not on my favorites list. And funny thing is, they are now. Chris Kern, I appreciate you being here on Grape Encounters.
It's always a pleasure, David.
Would you love to go someplace special and enjoy a nice Bordeaux on your birthday? Well, you'll have a lot of money to spend on wine if you celebrate on Catalina Island. That's because the fast and comfortable Catalina Express will take you to Catalina on your birthday absolutely free. This program was unveiled on May 1st to celebrate the 30th birthday of the Catalina Express, and guess who got to be the first to take advantage of this truly awesome offer? Yep, little old Mayday me. Catalina Express has multiple daily departures out of Long Beach, San Pedro, and Dana Point. And for a small fee, you can even upgrade to the Commodore's Lounge, where a nice glass of wine, champagne, or their world-famous Bloody Mary is part of the package. Birthday or not, this is a great time to visit Catalina. For more information about schedules, fares, hotel packages, activities like the new Zipline Eco Tour, or to book tickets online, visit CatalinaExpress.com. Start your adventure at CatalinaExpress.com.
It's so easy to go to Catalina, Catalina Express, Catalina.
You know, the world of Facebook is a lot like the world of Grape Encounters. Millions of people creating community and camaraderie through shared interests and connections. And honestly, who in their right mind doesn't love wine? That's why Grape Encounters Radio has created a group space for you to share your passion. If you're on Facebook and you have yet to join the Grape Encounters Radio group page, what are you waiting for? Thousands of your closest soon-to-be friends are there meeting others, having fun, sharing your own discoveries and experiences, and inspiring us with questions and ideas that help to make each new edition of Grape Encounters Radio, the place to gather for a conversation among the wine-loving community. It's easy to join, and the price is right. It's free. All it takes is just a couple of moments of your time the next time you log into Facebook. Just enter Grape Encounters Radio into the search field, and there you are. And once you're our friend on Facebook, share the wealth. Let your family, friends, colleagues, and others who love wine know about your discovery, too. Many of the guests you enjoy hearing on Grape Encounters Radio made their way to the super-secret broadcast location by way of our Facebook group page. Will you be next?
And it's always my favorite part of Grape Encounters Radio. It's the part that I get to sit down with our dear friend and our resident expert when it comes to wine gadgets, Matt Dubow, the gadget guru. And Matt, you probably have no idea what we're going to talk about today.
I have no idea.
You know, we had talked about some other subjects, but then I got to thinking about something the other night, and it was surprising to me as I thought about it that it was a subject I'd never talked about on Grape Encounters. 120-something episodes, and I hadn't talked about it. And here's the really weird part about it, It's a part of most every wine bottle. Here's the big question. Okay. Do you know why there's foil on a wine bottle? There's a lot of different explanations for it, and you're going to get different answers from different people.
I'm sure. What I've heard and read is it was a way to protect the cork as well as to stop the leakage.
Okay. So you're saying then that the foil is sort of like a depends for your wine.
That's okay. Let's go that way.
So Matt says that it's to stop any leakage.
Right. And to protect the cork.
To protect the cork. I think you're right on both counts. And actually, in the olden days, there was a tendency for varmints to get into the wine cellars. Mm-hmm. And they would get their little steely little teeth in there. And they would do that. And they would, what? Well, that's the
if
sound
you guys could see the visual on
that's
this.
That's the sound varmints make. Anyway, so the foil was meant to keep them out. Now, what is the foil made of?
Well, I think it used to be made out of lead, but now it's made out of tin, I believe.
I believe you are correct.
Thank you.
And it wasn't all that long ago, in the early 1990s, that they stopped allowing the foil to be lead. It's really funny because they were all over lead-based paint way before that.
Right.
But I think that the FDA didn't care if they killed off the wine drinkers of the world.
No, not at all.
They were so worried about babies chewing on windowsills and dying from lead-based paint poisoning. In the meantime, there were people at parties that were ripping the foil right off the wine bottle with their teeth, and nobody gave a hoot.
Not at all.
Anyway, I think actually there are still some wines that have lead capsules on the bottle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's called foil, and I personally, I'm a big, big fan of tradition and romance and style.
I didn't
right?
know that.
So I go off on the twist caps only because I just like the whole romantic style of preparing a bottle of wine to be served and serving the bottle of wine. And foil cutters still big at your place?
Oh, yeah. We sell quite a few different foil cutters.
Who buys them?
Total Wines buy them, Beverages and More. The smaller stores do as well.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, but you can actually clip your toenails with these as well. No, you can't. Anyway, so you can get a standalone foil cutter. It's not a big deal, but it really looks nice when you do it.
Again, it's the whole presentation.
And I don't get why people are so down on presentation, especially the proponents of certain things like twist caps. They go, presentation, no big deal. It's about the wine. But if that were true, then wouldn't you just, after you cook a nice meal, just put the pot off the stove on the table? Why would you even dress up when you go out on a date? You know, presentation does matter in so many ways, and it should matter with wine as well. Okay, any other reasons why there should be foil in a bottle?
Well, I think it adds a certain element of dressing the bottle up because you see different colors of foil, and it adds to the look of the bottle.
Yeah, you are right, actually. And not only that, there are certain winemakers that are beginning to use that foil area as a place to advertise and put messages on their bottle.
Huh.
And no, it's not odd.
Who does that?
Go into the grocery store or a wine store, and you'll see several that actually have
somebody else's product?
No, their own messages.
Okay.
No, not somebody else's product, but you get the idea. The thing that I like about the foil, and this is one that you don't hear people talk about much, but when you cut the foil away and you pour the wine and then you stand the bottle back up, the little dribble that would normally run down the side of the bottle,
mm-hmm.
it actually gets sucked down into that foil area in between the foil and the bottle and just kind of spreads out there and leaves the bottle looking nice and neat. Did you know that?
I don't think that's true.
That is absolutely true.
I don't think that's true at all. That's why you need a drip ring.
A drip ring.
Right.
And I suppose you sell those.
We do.
Well, tell me about drip ring.
Well, it's a ring that goes over the neck of the bottle after you open it up, and it catches all of that residual wine that's being poured that goes down the neck of the bottle.
You know what? If you didn't have a...
If you want the whole presentation...
Okay.
Well, why do you think a waiter uses a napkin to put around the neck of the bottle? It's the same thing.
Because they're hiding the fact that it's a $2 bottle of wine that you ordered for the people at the table, and you probably pulled the waiter aside and said, hey, could you just wrap that in a napkin for me? Don't show them the label.
Okay, you're giving away my secret.
Anyway, there are lots of reasons for the foil on the bottle. It does actually protect the bottle from other things getting inside the bottle, because there actually are bacteria that can get into the bottle in between the cork and the glass. And this adds an extra measure of protection for that. It's a nice touch for packaging. It stops that little drip. It keeps varmints from chewing the cork out of the bottle. Overall, it's just a nice little bit of presentation. So get your foil cutter at epicstyle.com. You can get them as a standalone cutter. And a lot of the wine opener kits have foil cutters, right?
They do. And most corkscrews now have a foil cutter attached on the corkscrew.
But you mean just like as a knife?
Correct.
I'll tell you what, I've slit my fingers open more than a couple of times.
On the knife?
I'm dead serious. This is not me making a joke. But I've actually slit my fingers open a couple of times trying to take the foil off with a knife, trying to be cool, and then the knife slips, and then, wow, I'm gored.
Yes, you are.
And that's it for the gadget guru. You know, I know that there's got to be some reason why I got to dislike you for what you just said, and I don't know what it is, but I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night and go, he didn't really mean it that way, did he? Huh, I wonder if he really did mean it. Anyway, I hope they sell Band-Aids at epicstyle.com. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters Radio. Seriously, I appreciate so much my guests today, Matt Dubow of epicstyle.com, Larry Schaefer of Tercero Wines, that's terceroWines.com, and Chris Kern of The Forgotten Grape. If you have missed any episodes of Grape Encounters Radio, you can find the entire library of every episode we've ever done at grapeencounters.com. Just go into the show library. We will be back next time, same channel. And in the meantime, keep that glass half full and keep an extra bottle nearby.
Join us next week for more Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson. If you don't, we'll be crushed.